If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. All right, right now we're going to go to the phones, and we talk to Colin Gordon. He's lead application engineer at the Schweitzer Engineering Laboratory, Wired Communications Division, and Colin specializes in communications and cybersecurity solutions. He's going to be making a presentation at Metricon, and you know we're giving press coverage to Metricon if you listen to this program regularly, and the title of his presentation is Integrating Physical Awareness into Cybersecurity Systems for Critical Control Networks. And that's pretty key, because lots of times the cyber people are separate from the physical security that a lot of these installations have. So I'm real interested in what Colin has to say. Welcome to the program, Colin.
Thank you, Colonel. I'm glad to be here today.
All right, now then, elaborate for us a little bit. We know in practice it's common that the physical security and cybersecurity response personnel and processes are separated, but you say they should be closer together, and so that's the subject of your presentation, is that right?
Yeah, indeed, and really that closeness is really a business need. And, you know, what happened is about a decade and a half ago, cybersecurity and physical security came much more into predominance, especially in critical infrastructure, with the advent of the NERC-SIP requirements. That's NERC is the North American Electric Reliability Corporation Critical Infrastructure Protection Rules. And what's happened since then is those rules have gotten just a little bit more elaborate. And especially in the last several years, since the now infamous Metcalf substation incident back in April of 2013, there's been a renewed focus on physical security and physical access control and monitoring systems.
All right, I want to stop you just a minute for the sake of our listeners. That is when, for 19 minutes, sharpshooters in outside of Silicon Valley surgically took out a substation, isn't it, and shut it down before the police even got there. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those little things that just happens. They fired something like 150 rounds, took out 17 or so transformers, and then evaporated into the night before the cops could get there. And then the important thing to note about that particular incident is that not a single customer lost any power whatsoever. So that utility that owned that substation did really an excellent job with their reliability of that system.
They had enough redundancy that they could get other sources of power in place pretty quick, even though that one went down. But it did bother us, because we thought, well, what if this happens on a grand scale where a lot of them are taken out at one time? And so what was the result of that? That's where you were going with this when I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, what happened is that NERC and the industry came together, and that, and by industry I mean many of the end users, those utilities, came together and proposed, drafted, and accepted a new standard, that is NERC-SIP 14, and they all did it in really record time. So it's kind of a great case of cooperation between the regulatory authorities and the industry. But what that meant is that there's a heightened sense of, well, we really need to think about physical security. Now, there's a couple of problems that have arisen since then. You know, one is that, you know, the physical security concerns for a vast majority of these switchyards, these substations, really was under the control of the operational staff, such as the technicians and the engineers who work there on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. But now with the advent of more digital-based physical access control and monitoring systems, many of those roles have been taken over or superseded by other groups within those organizations. So, for instance, corporate security very commonly owns badging systems, cameras, and other systems. And at the same time, if you're getting data back from these substations about the state of your physical security system, that also incorporates much of the informational staff, such as IT, who need to be able to secure and get that information back as reliably as possible. So now, instead of just one group, the operational staff, you have up to maybe two or three or even four different groups, all who have a part in physical security. So really the substance of my talk is, well, how do we go about tackling, presenting that information to these various groups in a way that enhances the reliability of the system, but also enhances the efficiency and reduces the cost of such physical and cybersecurity systems.
Okay, but this sounds like a pretty big order. What are some of the things that you would suggest with bringing together physical and cyber security? I mean, we've got all kinds of things to be concerned with. The SCADA, supervisory control and data acquisition systems that somebody managed to compromise in Iran a few years ago, which took their whole nuclear program and put it out of operation for a while. There's still talk about who was responsible for that and how that happened. And you had I noticed that you're concerned too about some of the various enforcement bodies, like the Nuclear Energy Regulatory Commission, demanding holistic situational awareness for combining both operational and informational resources. So how's this going to work?
Well, that's a great question, and there's a lot of questions in there. But first of all, what I want to do, Colonel, is just contrast reality with small incidents like what happened with Stuxnet over in Iran. Okay. You know, the real threat to our systems grid today in North America isn't necessarily any shadow state, although that is a threat, and we recognize that. Really, it's our furry little friends, the squirrels, that cause the most damage on distribution circuits nowadays in North America. So we do have to contextualize what that threat is. But that being said, you know, we always see security when it comes to physical security or digital security as a subset of reliability, because that's really what the end goals of our customers are and of the utilities, okay, is to make sure that the lights remain on, you know, without any interruptions or with a short amount of interrupted time as possible. Mm-hmm. So we always see security as really a subset of reliability. Now, that being said, there's many different things that we can do as far as ensuring greater reliability and thus security of the power system. You know, one of the things that we can do is start simply with busting down silos within organizations. Make sure that your informational people are aware of and speak on a regular basis with your operations people. Sometimes many utilities have gone as far as combining some groups where they either create new informational or IT people within the operations staff, or they combine them and make them one simple organization within that utility. So there is some personnel things that can be done just as far as business management, simply to get people talking to each other in a more efficient manner. So that's one response. Another response could be simply looking at the data that's being returned from your SCADA devices in a different way. You know, if I can make an analogy to your smartphone, whether you have an Android phone or an iPhone, has all these different interesting technologies inside of them. You know, when you lift up your phone, there's an accelerometer inside of that phone that creates data that's then used by the phone to do some sort of action. There's even a light sensor in most phones. Well, if we have accelerometers and light sensors or input contacts on our devices already inside of our SCADA systems, my question then is, can we reuse that data in an informational way that both our physical security staff as well as our cybersecurity staff can use? One example of that is, you know, a light sensor changing status could mean something entirely different to a protection engineer. A light sensor could mean, hey, there's an arc flash event and maybe there's some sort of problem with my power system that I need to pay attention to immediately. But a light sensor change to a cybersecurity person or a physical security person could mean that, you know, hey, maybe someone just passed in front of my sensor, or maybe someone's taking a flashlight and looking at the front of my device. Maybe I should be aware of that, and maybe I should think about checking out my cameras or having some other sort of response to that system. So that's another way, is simply by thinking about using data in different ways and really getting people talking to each other and looking at that data in ways that could be understood by multiple groups. So really, beyond just, you know, throwing a huge amount of money at the problem and putting up 3 30-foot walls or buying, you know, a massive amount of new equipment and communication paths, there's other things that can be done really today with very little money to increase both the physical security and the physical awareness of what's going on in these environments.
Well, what you're saying then is that change the language of the data that's being sent back so that you don't just see the flash, or you don't just get this particular piece of data that could be any number of different things, but have it speak a different language so you can tell what it is causing the problem. Is that what you're proposing?
Yes. And Colonel, let me give you a practical example of that. You know, let's say we have a programmable logic controller that's sitting in a substation somewhere, and its data is typically presented using some sort of SCADA protocol, let's say Modbus or DNP.
Okay.
Well, Modbus and DNP protocols, those are pretty foreign to someone who works in IT who maybe needs to get information about the physical state of that system. However, there are data that are able to be used by IT, such as Syslog or SNMP monitoring. SNMP stands for Simple Network Management Protocol. And so if there are ways that we can change that original data, let's say Modbus or DNP, into something that can be easily absorbed by our IT systems that are currently in place, like Syslog or SNMP, then automatically that makes it a world more interesting to our informational users, so that both our operations people who are getting that SCADA information in almost real time, as well as our informational people, can now have real-time awareness based off that same data. And really, that's something you don't need to go out and buy another device for. It's simply looking at data in a different way by using two different protocols.
Well, okay, look, look at the data in a different way, but I mean, somebody would have to know how to differentiate between what the data is saying to one person and is not saying to someone else, I would think, and that's why I'm asking about, what, is there a change in code words, or a change in tone, or how do you adjust these things?
Well, this would be adjusted by the device itself or by some sort of protocol translator. Now, protocol translators are already used in substation environments all the time. Protocol translators oftentimes receive inputs using one protocol and then output to another protocol to the actual end programmable logic controller or even the relays themselves. So by simply updating the profile inside of these protocol converters, we can make that data much more interesting to our IT staff. So let's say you're already pulling with some sort of protocol or some sort of data stream to a PLC. We can then, on the upstream, back to informational, we can provide a separate data information stream about the state of that programmable logic controller. And now with very little input, we're able to get both the IT guys getting information about digital security as well as physical security, and our protection guys are still getting the same kind of information that they need to be able to run these systems.
Wow. So and this would be, as you say, an inexpensive and easy thing to do when you get in and just do a little bit of programming adjustments.
Exactly. It's just using a little bit of creativity and a little bit of engineering to get that same kind of data that you would normally have to spend a lot of money to get.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about our biggest enemy are our furry little friends, the squirrels. That's a new one on me, because the one I remember is the limb of a tree in Ohio falling on a power line and having a cascading power failure all over the Northeast back, 10, 15 years ago, something like that, the early 200s.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, even in recent natural disasters, that's always been the most painful thing to deal with, is not necessarily cybersecurity, although, again, that's very important, but the two words flora and fauna that we have to deal with. I mean, even recently up here in the Pacific Northwest, one of our utilities, Avista, had a big windstorm that came in and knocked down a lot of trees, and that created a huge response and a huge amount of money that needed to be spent in order to address just tree limbs. So again, when we contextualize things, of course, we have to integrate physical and cybersecurity. We understand the importance of that. But when it comes to the day-to-day events that really keep our technicians up at night, it's probably more a tree limb or a squirrel than anything else.
Well, you know, Encore Electric Delivery here in North Texas is one of the sponsors of Metricon Conference, where you're going to be speaking. And I talk to these guys all the time, and they're constantly reassuring me that security is at the top of the list. It goes all the way through the company right up to the boardroom. And that's the thing that they are constantly looking at every single day, every hour of every day, and how they can keep the security and safe. And yet, they're also reassuring me that the redundancy that they have is so good, like that situation in California with the snipers taking out the substation, that they're not, in some ways, complacent. So is complacency something that you have to battle when you're talking to these people about making the cyber protection and the physical protection kind of commingle?
Well, that's a great question, and what I would say is I think someone famous quoted that complacency is the enemy of progress. You know, I can't speak to details at Encore too much because I don't know them myself, but one thing that's really reassuring about how Encore has been tackling the problem is they have cybersecurity people all the way up in their C-level, their chief executive, information officers, or chief executive security officers, right up to their CEO or president who is aware of the cybersecurity status of their company. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many different organizations I've seen where no one at the C-level or no one at the management level either knows or cares about the security state of their infrastructure or their systems. I mean, perhaps you remember back to the Target hack. That was a big hack that happened starting Black Friday or Christmas or several years back. And really what that came down to is the CEO ended up losing his job because he had no awareness of the cybersecurity posture of his company. And really that reflected on Target's actions as well as the huge hack that happened at that organization. And it's really good to see entities like Encore and their response, not just having the technical details that they're trying to implement with cybersecurity and physical security, but also how aware they are of security all the way up at their management levels. And without knowing much more about a particular entity, that is probably the number one factor that you want to look at when looking at the state of cybersecurity in the utilities is how aware are the management.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about drones too. I know this may be a little out of your purview here, since you're speaking of other things. But we talked about the squirrels being a threat, and the snipers, and the tree limbs, and the flora and fauna, and this sort of thing. But right at the moment, you can buy drones pretty cheap, and you can equip them with explosives pretty easy. And I think, and I'm not speaking authoritatively here, but it seems to me that there's a federal law that we cannot interfere with a flying object. And what about protection from drones? Have you given any thought to that?
No, actually, I have given a little bit of thought to that. And there's two answers. First of all, as an engineer, I have to base my responses for security based off the actual threats that I see day to day. So drones carrying explosives so far have not been high on my personal radar. But the second response would be, if you're faced with a flying object that could potentially kill you, I think reason would dictate that exigent circumstance would take over, and certainly you'd be allowed to down that object. Really, I see the advent of drones and drone technology, although the FAA has slowed down the acceleration of that technology just a little bit, I see drones as really a boon for physical security. I mean, imagine instead of having to have personnel or dogs or a numerous amount of cameras out there, imagine being able, as an entity, to be able to have drones in the hundreds or even thousands patrolling your environment for you and being able to alert you in real time if there's actually a physical threat that's occurring on your system. One speculation you could certainly have is if drones existed and PG&E had them, perhaps we'd know who those perpetrators were at the Metcalf substation.
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, and of course that's quite true. But I guess the original concern of mine wasn't necessarily with the power supplies, but it was with the airports. You get an airplane coming in, you land a drone on top of that aircraft and kill every passenger on board, and either in the air or on the ground, and all of a sudden everybody's going to be paying a lot of attention to drones. So that's where my original concern was, and then I realized that, gee whiz, we're vulnerable all over the place with drones. Of course, this country is using drones very effectively to take out the bad guys, in foreign countries, with operators sitting comfortably in Utah. So we have proven the effectiveness of drones.
Yeah, and I hear you. And, you know, I'm never going to say that an incident like that could not happen. We don't like to talk about things that could never happen in the security business. But what I would say is that I'm sure our airlines are much more concerned about birds and engines right now, as there's a certain movie that came about that recently, I think. There was a pilot in New York that had to land his plane in the Hudson River based on bird strikes.
Oh, yeah.
But industry is more worried, again, about foliage or fauna and flora than drones at this time. But, you know, I'm not going to dismiss what you say, because I'm not going to say it could never happen. But what I would say is the real threats out there right now is what most of those industries are concerned about.
Well, Colin, what have we missed? What haven't I asked you? What's the takeaway? What do you want people to go away and really the thrust of what you have to say at the conference?
Well, you know, at SEL, our mantra is teaching is selling, and listening is selling also. And really, we want to be able to go out there and be able to share ideas. The idea being, you don't have to go out and spend millions of dollars on new technology. Maybe if you think about reframing your organization so that people and original organizations that might have silos, they can break down those silos and talk to each other. You know, maybe think about using information in new ways that becomes informational to different groups within an organization. These are ideas that don't take a lot of money but might be able to help you solve a problem that you have today. And really, that's what I want that takeaway to be.
All right, put on your futuristic cap for a minute, your thinking cap, and look 5, 10, maybe 15 years down the road. Give us a look into the future. Where do you see us going? Give us a view down the road.
Sure. So, you know, one thing you've already brought up that I've been thinking about myself, which is how can drone technology be used for physical defense? And I think, you know, there is, in this election season, there's a lot of talk about walls and things like that. Well, we don't need to build the walls if we have things like drone technology that are able to help with physical awareness and physical security in the first place. So I think that drones are one of those things, 10, 15 years down the road, that could provide a huge boon for physical security for many organizations. The second thing I would like to look at is there's this trend now in networking. Remember, I am a wired communications person, but there's a trend that's abstracting a lot of the intelligence out of these networking devices and putting them into a centralized computer. And when you do that, you can have the ability then to look at all of your different devices across your entire infrastructure in real time and provide dynamic traffic control options and everything else for your communication environment. I think that that same kind of idea can be applied to SCADA devices and physical awareness devices as well, where there's a single simple controller that sits at a simple location that's able to push and pull real-time information out of all these devices, which could be dumbed down then to provide, and then that centralized controller could provide that information to various groups within an organization in a way that those organizations or those groups need to see that data. So I think there's going to be, the parlance in the industry is, a further abstraction of the control plane from the data plane. And I think that's also going to be a big boon to organizations coming now 10 or 15 years.
Wow, what an insight. Colin, you're a fascinating, fascinating guest. I have to ask you before we get out of here, I know that in your career you've been mentored by people, and you're probably mentoring people right at the moment. And how about a word of wisdom, words to live by, something we can kind of take as a creed of living? Do you have something for us?
Sure. First of all, I'm only 31, so I'm not really qualified to answer that. But I will give you an observation. I think the best information always comes off social media. I'm slightly sarcastic about that. But I did see something last week on Twitter. There was a hashtag that was going around about your first 7 jobs. And I thought that was really interesting because you could read about the first 7 jobs that, you know, many different people in engineering or aeronautics had, including Buzz Aldrin. And, you know, many of these people that are considered to be American heroes really had inauspicious beginnings, like a camp counselor or a cook or a laborer. And so my word of wisdom really would be is don't look at particular jobs as being above you. Always have that kind of perseverance and self-initiative, and be willing to work jobs even if it doesn't look like they're going to get you to where they want to go.
All right, that's some real good wisdom. It made me kind of chuckle a little bit because I remember my first job. I don't even talk about it very much before I got into radio, and I was 16.
I mowed lawns.
Beg pardon?
I mowed lawns, so there's a lot of labor in my background.
Well, I was a bootlegger.
Hey, that's even better.
At age 16, I had a source for alcohol at the non-commissioned officers club at the air base near me, where I had a pass to get on and off the club anytime I wanted to. And I could buy it really cheap, and I supplied all the liquor for the senior graduation parties that were going on, and made some pretty good money doing it too. I bought several cars that way, and financed my going off to college. So that was kind of cool. So.
Well, there you go. I guess you shouldn't throw away any opportunity for just any job.
No, I guess if I would have been a little older, I wouldn't have been a bootlegger. I'd have been a drug dealer, I suppose, or something. I don't know. But anyway, hey, you've been absolutely a fascinating guest. Thank you so much for being with us. We're looking forward to meeting you at the Metricon conference, and it'll be a real joy. So thanks a bunch, Colin.
All right. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Colin Gordon, lead application engineer at the Schweitzer Engineering Laboratory, Wired Communications Division, specializing in communication and cybersecurity solutions. Thanks a bunch. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz.